Hi, folks. Bob Main here with another episode of the Handgun World Podcast. Episode 314 to be exact. Well, let's see. What day is today anyway? The day that I'm dictating this is the 26th of March, 2015. Kind of thought I'd throw that date out there because I don't normally do that. Thanks for tuning in. If you're a relatively new listener, you'll find out this is a pretty practical podcast that I do. I'm mostly an everyday guy. You know, I'm a Yankee with a gun, born in New York City, raised in Wisconsin. Now I live in the great gun-friendly state of Texas. And even though I do a little bit of firearms training, I'm just an ordinary dude taking my Second Amendment rights seriously. So this week, I want to start with some voicemails. Recently, I've had quite a few listeners call in, and I'm going to go over a couple of them here. I think two or three of them. I've had people call into the voicemail. Now, if you want to call in, the number is 210-646-1727. That's 210-646-1721. So before I get to the main topic, I want to address these voicemails in this segment. So here comes the first one.
Hey, Bob. My name is Doug from Nevada, and I'm commenting about your podcast about criminals having training and not having to hesitate before they shoot. I wanted to address that. That is one of my biggest concerns that I have, both professionally and personally, is hesitation, and hesitation does kill. It takes a lot of time, and you've got to train through. My firearms training, I think, is pretty good. It's like learning how to drive a stick shift. I'm way beyond that to the point where everything but my trigger pulls is fairly well set, and I think I do very well, although I haven't had any bullets flying at me. But what concerns me is hesitation. Hesitation on the job is something that, how you can articulate a circumstance and how you reacted and how the public may look at it. How the public looked at the Michael Brown incident in Ferguson, the hands up, don't shoot narrative that was pushed by the co-conspirator in that case, got way beyond what reality was. And I think with some officers, that's going to make them hesitate to worry about how that's going to be perceived. And in my private life, I also worry about how that is going to be perceived, any action that I take. And what happens is that takes a lot of time out of me responding. The criminal doesn't do that. The criminal knows you're a target. He's already ahead on you on the mental game, and that's what you've got to overcome, and it gets very scary. There was a case of Andrew Brennan, who fired on and killed a cop named Kyle Dinkelheller in 1998. It was a very famous video. And that officer hesitated and gave the guy a lot of chances to put down his gun and act right, and the guy ended up shooting him and killing him. And what you'll find is that his hesitation was based on him being disciplined for being too aggressive the week prior. So that, for me, is something that, to get a hold of that, to compress that hesitation down, is to train more in the force-on-force tactic type stuff. Run the scenarios over and over again so that all of the other factors, besides you thinking about what needs to happen, shrink down, and you've been there already. You don't want to think about, God, is this the right time, or how is this going to be perceived? You kind of want to go through that stuff beforehand. And I'm certainly working on that as being my biggest hurdle, knowing when the right time is and trying not to have that hesitation that will get me or my family killed. And that's a huge hurdle which you've got to train through, and still working on it, like I'm working on everything else. But thank you for your show. You sound great, and the show is fantastic.
Thank you, Doug. You couldn't be more right. Hesitation can be a huge disaster for you. So, yeah, work all that stuff out in advance. I agree. You know, if you don't think that you could pull the trigger on a bad guy to save your life or the life of others, then don't carry a gun, folks. Seriously, don't carry a gun. Now, don't take me the wrong way. I hope somebody doesn't, you know, perceive me as being some kind of a trigger-happy person. I'm not promoting that. I'm not promoting to shoot first and ask questions later. No, that's nonsense. But once you've made the decision to defend yourself, you got to be able to do it without hesitation. And that just comes through training, and like Doug says, that comes through thinking it out in advance. That comes from settling all these issues in advance. If you take a Mag 40 course, if you go to Masada Yub's 40-hour course, he will help you get through a lot of the decision-making that you have to make. But, I mean, his is not the only course either. There are others, you know, and if you train with Ben and I, we talk a little bit about mindset in our courses as well. All of our courses, we do have a mindset discussion in that class. So we'll kind of get you thinking about that as well. But, you know, Doug brings up a great point, hesitation. Wow. And he brings up force-on-force training, which I have very few callers and people bring that up. Even when they email, I have very few people bringing that up. I think that's some of the most valuable training out there. And in the main topic, I'm going to talk a little bit more about that. But force-on-force training with airsoft guns and things like that is really, really valuable because it does a very, very good job of simulating an actual gunfight. And I mentioned that in a podcast a couple of weeks ago. So I think Doug's voicemail here is right on. I think he's spot on, and I think you really need to work out all that in advance. Can you pull the trigger? If you search for some of my old podcasts, I actually did an entire episode called Can You Pull the Trigger? All right, let's take the next voicemail.
Hey Bob, it's Alex again from St. Louis. I gave you a call maybe a month or so ago about my 2,000 round trigger jobs to my new Springfield Armory XDS 3.3 inch 9mm. You asked me to keep you up to date. Well, I'm finished. I finished today. I shot a 685 rounds today to polish off both of them. So, I didn't do all of them, obviously, for my wife. She has done some as well. But I had sold my LC9, my generation LC9 that had the hammer. I was not happy with that hammer. It just never got better. It wasn't striker fired like the new ones. Transitioned to the XDS. The things I like about it, the functionality out of the box, it worked great. I had no failure to feeds, failure to ejects with 1,000 rounds each. That's pretty amazing. All I did was simply out of the box take them out, field strip them, clean off the gunk, reapplied my favorite lubricant, which is frog lube, put them back in the range bag and took them up there. The size and feel, they're perfect. They do feel solid. The slide feels a little bit more robust than I thought it had to be in a good way. It felt really sturdy, and I feel like I can feel the quality in them. Some things, however, that I don't like is, first off, I can't seem to get high enough on the grip. I don't know if it's just the angle. I don't know what it is, but I keep trying. I'm just really trying to get as high on that as I possibly can and at least some to be desired. Secondly, well, just two fingers on the 7-round magazine, which, you know, it's nature of the beast. You're going to give up something for concealability. When I tuck my pinky under, it's just not the most pleasant. However, you know, that's a carry gun. However, the magazine release, when I hit that, you know, the fat part of my hand could obstruct the dropping of that magazine, I've noticed. And so this just adds a little bit to my training when I'm at the range, making sure I'm clear of the underneath so I can drop out. And then lastly is the magazine release button itself. On either of my gun or my wife's gun, they feel the same. There's a little bit of play in that, both sides. It's an ambidextrous magazine release button. There's a little bit of play. It's mushy. It kind of goes in maybe a third of the way, and then you really have to press hard, and it releases the magazine. I don't know if there's something I can do about that, if there's an aftermarket, if there's an extension to put on there, or what. But, you know, overall, I give it an A. I mean, I'm happy to carry it. I'm proud to carry it. I think it's quality. So the 2,000 round trigger jobs are complete, and I will put these in my normal carry holsters. So, I've actually ordered a new outside the waistband holster from El Paso Saddlery. I love El Paso Saddlery. I'm an old school brown and black leather guy with a nice design on there. I have my concealment solutions as well as crossbreeds. I like those for a time, but I also do like my outside the waistbands, and I always get them from El Paso. Next, Bob, is regarding training. I want to let you know you've had an effect on me about the 1,000 round trigger jobs and about training. I've joined a pretty nice range out here in Metro St. Louis. And it's outside west a little bit. It's called Benchrest Rifle Club, and of St. Louis. And it's a huge complex, and I'm proud to be a member there. But what I also like about it is they offer pretty good training. I've just taken the Range Safety Officer Training, RSO, so I'm an NRA certified, as well as a club certified RSO. And then also just this past Sunday morning, I took first aid, AED, and gunshot wound trauma class. It was a 4-hour class, and they offered it free to the RSOs. So, I know you're talking primarily about training with a handgun, but I'm also soaking up some training about peripheral things that I can use, something with my family, at my community, at work, at church, whichever. So thanks for that. You're feel free to share this on your next podcast if you'd like. Thanks for everything. Take care, Bob. Bye-bye.
Wow, Alex, that's awesome. Thanks for the update. You bet I'm going to share it on the next podcast, which happens to be this one. Cool. Wow, he's taken the 1,000-round trigger job seriously. He's taken training seriously. In fact, even taken the first aid training and everything. I mean, just fantastic, Alex. I appreciate that. Couple things I will say. Yes, the XDS is a great gun. I'm going to agree with you on that. The only thing I don't like about the XDS is the same thing that you mentioned in this voicemail. The Springfield XD guns, for me, make it pretty difficult for me to get the kind of high grip that I like to get. Glocks and M&Ps are fine. I can get that nice, real high grip. Now, there are some people that get too high of a grip on Glocks, especially. Ben Branham happens to Ben all the time. He gets slide bite from the Glocks. Of course, the fourth generation Glocks have fixed that by giving you the beaver tail. But the thing I don't like about the beaver tail on the fourth gen Glocks is that it makes the grip bigger, and I don't want to do that. I like the size of the way the grip is, with no grip panels on it, the fourth generation Glocks with no grip panels. I like that. That's a good size. So it's kind of why I'm becoming more of an M&P man right now. I can get the nice high grip. But there's nothing wrong with the XDS. And Alex, that's great. You've given them a 1,000-round trigger job. In other words, you've tested them for reliability. You know that they're reliable. You're putting them in your carry holster, your El Paso Saddlery carry holsters. And by the way, speaking of outside holsters, outside the waistband holsters, I talked to Jason Christensen a couple weeks ago. I'm asking him to kind of redesign some clips for the ASP, the appendix-specific platform 2.0 that I'm using to carry my M&P shield right now as I speak to you. And when I was talking to him, he said he's coming up pretty soon with a really cool outside-the-waistband holster, all Kydex. So, Alex, you might not like it because you're a leather guy, but other people who like outside the waistband Kydex, Jason assures me this is going to be a sweet one. So I'll be talking about that as well, probably going to pick one of those up. And by the way, I have an episode coming up on holsters. And for those of you who are members of the Shooters Club, I am going to be very soon putting up a video on holsters. I'm going to take a little bit of a different stance on holsters than most people do. I'll just leave it at that. It's going to be different. It's not going to be what you're used to hearing and seeing out there on the internet, YouTube, and every place else, podcasts and things like that. My holster episode coming up shortly, maybe even next week, is going to be a little bit different. So be looking for that. Alex, this was great. I'm glad you called in, and I'm glad to hear the success stories. That's awesome. There's nothing more gratifying to hear feedback like yours, which are success stories. People taking what I talk about and going out and applying it and using it and making it their own. And I know that most of you are taking the best and leaving the rest. That's one of my mottos, take the best and leave the rest. You might not like everything I say. I hope you don't like everything I say. I hope you don't agree with everything I say. And take the best. Whatever works for you, whatever you can use, take it and leave the rest. But whatever you take, the best that you take, make it your own, please, okay? And go out there and do something with it. And then call me or email me and let me know what's going on. All right, let's take the next voicemail.
Hey, Bob. Glad to hear you're up and running again. And continue to pray for you and your wife and your family. But anyway, continue to love the show. Hey, quick comment for you. not so much a question as something I'd be interested in hearing on a future show. I know a while back you did an interview with Gabe Suarez, and really enjoy his stuff, or enjoy the Forum on Warrior Talk, and know that you're a member over there as well as an instructor for him. I'd love to have him back on the show. I know you had him on a while back, but would like to have him again if you get a chance. Anyway, just like kind of his perspective on mindset and some of the things, and just would like to have another interview with it if you get a chance. Thanks, Bob.
Sir, thank you for the well wishes, thank you for the prayers, and thank you for the voicemail. I'm working on that. I'm trying to get Gabe Suarez on the show. Hopefully I can do that in the next week or two. Only problem I'm having is his schedule. He's a busy, busy guy. But I'm working on that, so stay tuned. By the way, you mentioned Warrior Talk. WarriorTalk.com. Check out that forum, folks. I've been on there many, many years and put up a lot of posts. One of the things I like about that gun forum compared to a whole lot of others is the Suarez International people, they keep it, they keep the discussions well moderated, and they keep it on topic. The other thing I like about it is there's a lot of substance in those, in most of those posts. A lot of substance. There's not just a lot of fluff. There are people on that forum that know what they're talking about, that been there, that done that. They're trainers, ex-military, cops, ordinary civilians, people that take this stuff seriously. And that's one of the things I like. So if you're not a member of Warrior Talk, go to warriortalk.com and you'll see me on there, and you'll see a whole bunch of other people on there. And of course, that's Gabe Suarez's forum. So thanks for the call. And as I mentioned, I am working on that for you. Okay. Now I want to address an email. Most of the time I don't discuss all the emails I get because boy, I get a lot of them. Thank you. I really appreciate every email. I read every email. So if you send me an email, don't think that I'm ignoring it. I am. But I get so many of them, they're just, it's simply not enough time to talk about them all. But every once in a while, I get one. And I got to talk about it. Kyle in Colorado sent me an email. Kyle, thank you for this. He asked me if I could talk about this on an upcoming show. Now, I already did a podcast on gun cliches. So if you listen to some of my older shows, you know, I did a podcast on a lot of silly things that people say in the gun community. All right. But he brought up a couple that I want to talk about. And so, Kyle, thanks for this. He asked me if I would throw in my two cents about some of this stuff. So this is kind of a dual topic podcast. It's about gun cliches. And then it's also about, do the target shooters have an advantage? I'll get to that shortly. Okay, one of the cliches that Kyle brings up, people say this all the time, an armed society is a polite society. Kyle says, I thought of what I witnessed personally in Tajikistan and Afghanistan on this one, and he says it's not necessarily true. How about that, huh? How about that? Here's what I'll say. I agree with Kyle. It's not necessarily true. A lot of people say an armed society is a polite society. Well, a lot of people can do some pretty bad things with firearms. I am not saying we should not be an armed society. Come on, folks. You know me, don't you? You know I'm a huge proponent of our gun rights and the people that are out there to protect our firearms right. Number one, I firmly 100% believe and support the Second Amendment to the Constitution of the United States of America and everybody who is out there to defend it. The NRA, although they're not perfect, I am a member, just signed up recently for a 5-year membership, and the Second Amendment Foundation just recently made another donation to the Second Amendment Foundation because I like what they're doing, especially those two organizations. I would suggest you do the same. I would like to add in there, a well-trained armed society is a polite society. Why do I say that? Why do I say a well-trained armed society is a polite society? I don't necessarily mean training in the art of winning gunfights. That's important. I teach that. I think you need to get training in the art of winning gunfights. But how about responsibility? How about responsibility? I've heard so many people in the gun podcast world, the radio gun world, the forums say, if you carry a gun, you bear a responsibility. Isn't that true? I believe it's true. Now, should the training be mandated? No, but you bear a responsibility. People need to be taught the responsible use and ownership of firearms. And quite frankly, many people are not taught the responsible ownership and the responsible carrying of firearms. Now, many of us that listen to this podcast, we grew up as youngsters and we went hunting with our parents, oftentimes our dad, and we carried a shotgun or we carried a rifle out into the field and we went hunting. I did that when I was a kid too. There's a big difference between that and handguns. A big difference. A big difference between that and handguns for self-defense. Just because you were a gun person as a kid carrying shotguns and rifles into the field going hunting, in my opinion, doesn't necessarily mean that you are a responsible handgun owner. Big difference. So I would like to see a well-trained in the art of responsibility armed society. Then I think we're going to have a very polite society. That's just kind of my take on that, okay? You may disagree, and that's okay. And if you have a good disagreement with me, by all means, you guys know I like feedback. If you have a disagreement with me, have a good reason for having your disagreement, tell me about it, email me, or voicemail. Okay, Kyle brings up in his email here another cliche that says, if you outlaw guns, only outlaws will have guns. Well, I got to say, I kind of agree with that. In fact, I fully agree with that. Everywhere that that guns have been outlawed, it doesn't seem to work. So I'm not sure if that's – I think that's a good cliche. I think that's actually a good statement. Everywhere that that gun confiscation and gun banning has been implemented, it just simply – does not work. Guns don't kill people. People kill people. That's another cliche Kyle brought up. I think that's another good one, too. I got a fair number of guns. And not one of my firearms that I've owned since I began getting serious about this back in 2005, not one has come out of the safe on its own, fired itself at another human being on its own. It's never happened. And they're loaded. Okay? I got loaded guns in my safe. They're not firing themselves. And if a person wants to harm somebody or kill somebody or do something and they can't find a gun, they're going to find another way to do it. They're going to find another way to do it. So Kyle also brings up another one, says, from my cold, dead hands. Well, we all remember Charlton Heston saying that, right? And, you know, that was kind of cool at the time, but I think that's kind of run its course, from my cold, dead hands. We have to be careful. We have to be careful not to make ourselves look kind of like fringe dwellers or loony people. We've got to make ourselves look like we are ordinary, law-abiding citizens that are not crazy, that are legitimate, professional people. And I don't mean that you have to have a professional job. I'm just talking about you've got to have a certain amount of class about you. Not that that was an unclassy statement that Charlton Heston made, but I think you get the point. You can't be a knucklehead and be a gun owner and go out there and try to persuade people that guns are okay. And I think the general public, see, we have an opinion battle to win. I've heard that Tom Gresham talks a lot about messaging, all right? We got to get our message out there in a professional and positive manner that guns are a good thing, that gun ownership is a good thing. The message from my cold, dead hands, I don't think is a real good message anymore. That's just my opinion. You know, you're going to get this gun from my cold, dead hands. It's not that I don't agree with people that try to prevent gun confiscation. Of course I agree with preventing that. I just don't think that the message from my cold, dead hands plays real well in the general audience today. And please don't take this attitude, well, to heck, I don't care what the general people think, what the general audience think. I don't care what the non-gun owners think. They can just stick it. No, they can't just stick it. We have to win the hearts and minds of non-gun owners, just like you hear politicians say that all the time. We as ordinary people, the grassroots out there, I think we are charged with that responsibility of winning the hearts and minds of other people out there and getting them to agree that guns are a good thing, that gun ownership is a good thing, and the carrying of firearms is a good thing. Would you agree? Anyway, Kyle, thanks for that email. I really appreciate that, and I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, some of these things are interesting, and we hear that all the time, and we read these things all the time. And if you've got more to say on that, Kyle, send me another email or send me a voicemail on that. Okay, let's take a quick break. And then I'll be back with sort of the second main topic.
The Brady Campaign is telling America that 85 people are killed with guns every day. What they are not saying is that nearly 60% of those deaths are suicides. Subtract those, justifiable self-defense shootings, and some very rare accidents, and the real number is 33 deaths each day. But the federal government tells us 80% of those deaths are gang violence. So the number the Brady should be talking about is 27 gang shootings a day, or less than 3 each for the 10 largest cities in the country. The Brady campaign needs to come clean, for once. Arm yourself with facts to strip the gun control industry bare. Visit gunfacts.info and get your free copy of Gun Facts. Called Indispensable by Cam Edwards of NRA News, Gun Facts is your rapid reference guide to debunking gun control myths and shaming politicians into obedience. www.gunfacts.info.
You want to be a combat accurate shooter? Be a target shooter first. As I researched combat accuracy, I found it to be a subjective definition. And that subjective definition most frequently sounded like any accuracy which significantly impairs or impedes the threat's ability to cause us harm. The problem with this definition is it's unmeasurable, and there's no way to know if you're being combat accurate outside of the combat. You could be a bad shooter or simply shoot bad and still be combat accurate because the bad guy decides to give up the fight, or you could be a very good shooter who places a very good shot, but for some reason your particular bad guy is motivated and decides to stay in the fight and kills you anyways. As I delved into this phenomenon of combat accuracy, I learned that almost any shot was acceptable. While some instructors were willing to accept an 8-inch grouping at 5 yards, still others were willing to accept smaller groupings, say 5 to 6 inches, at the same distance. I was left a bit bemused at these standards, and I actually began to wonder if some students weren't being defrauded. I noted some disdain was shown towards target shooters and target shooting skills by those who defend combat accuracy. For those who understand fundamentals, we recognize that shooting a 5-inch group at 5 yards really isn't accuracy at all. And frankly, it was kind of depressing to observe that some students were willing to accept that practically no shooting skill or marksmanship fundamentals were required to survive a gunfight. Please consider that a shot through the heart is a really good place to put a bullet if you want to end a threat quickly. The average human heart is the size of the average human's fist. Now, there's major arteries that come out the top of the heart, and those major arteries run either down the spinal cord or up the spinal cord towards the brain. Speaking of that spinal cord and brain, those are really good places to put shots too. Unfortunately, your spinal cord is only about 1 1/2 inch in diameter, with some bony projections that extend to the side maybe 3.5 inches. The brain's a great place to put a shot, tends to end the fight very quickly. The problem is if you point your gun at someone's face, I promise you, they're going to move your face. So the largest and best place to put a bullet is going to become a moving target. All of this means is that the things that you actually do need to hit to almost ensure a quick ending to this gunfight is much smaller than the 8-inch circle. In fact, they're smaller than the 6-inch circle. Combat accuracy defenders are the first to mock target shooters with the saying, "The paper targets don't shoot back." I'll give them credit. They do understand that skills degrade under stress. The problem is that they fail to remember that, one, they're not immune from that degradation of skills, and two, the target shooter actually starts from a much higher level of skill than they do, and it eclipses that pathetic 8-inch grouping at 5 yards. To be able to hit that 4-inch target at 5 yards under extreme duress means that you should be able to hit a 3-inch or even a 2-inch target at the same distances while standing still on the public firing line. And that starts to sound an awful lot like target shooting. To understand that, let me read you something. A 2-inch group at 5 yards is truly not bullseye shooting. Bullseye shooting is done at much further distances. It's also shot one-handed. The rapid fire portion of the bullseye match is 5 shots in 10 seconds on an NRA B8 target. The 10 ring of the B8 target is 5 1/2 inches in diameter, which is the same as 2 3/4 inches at 12 1/2 yards, which is essentially 1 1/3 inches at just under 7 yards. Well, now isn't that interesting? A 2-inch group at 5 yards is a lot like bullseye shooting. Seems like what I'm saying is that if you're planning to survive a critical dynamic incident and you're crafting a structured training regimen, it should account for certain realities. And those of realities are attempting to get a 4-inch or smaller target at 5 yards under stress when your skills are going to degrade. All of this brings me to my final observations. If you're shooting at a target at 7 yards and your front sight is anywhere in the notch of the rear sight and not extremely high or low, you should be able to keep a 4-inch group. That's a 4-inch group at 7 yards executing the grossest of fundamentals. How does that compare to combat accuracy? And what does it say about the instructor that expects you to accept an 8-inch grouping at 5 yards? More importantly, how much did you spend to not learn to shoot and likely not be ready to survive a gunfight? You ruminate on that. I'm going to go practice. The Deadeye Method, where we make better, smarter, safer shooters.
Okay, I played that audio clip from a YouTube video, and I really didn't introduce it. I just wanted you to hear it first, and then I'm going to make some comments on it. I vehemently disagree with this guy. Target shooters have the advantage? Really? What gunfight, somebody please tell me, if you've been in a gunfight, please chime in. What gunfight ends up turning out to be like a target shooting event? Please. Somebody please tell me if you've been in a handgun defensive use, a defensive use of a handgun. Okay. Tell me if you've been in one that turned out like a target shooting event. Now, I'm not saying that marksmanship is no good. I've said it before many, many times. I teach marksmanship. I think it's good. In every single class, we make sure that people have their marksmanship dialed in. If their marksmanship skills are not good, we work with them until they are good before moving on to some more of the combative parts of our training. But learning to shoot tight groups just, in my opinion, I don't think that gives you an advantage. As a matter of fact, how do you know if you shot tight groups? Well, you got to stand there, stand still, and shoot at a piece of paper. Now, how many of you have been attacked by a cardboard target? Any of you? Any of you been attacked by a cardboard target standing still? How about a cardboard target shooting back at you? Okay, and before you think, well, you know, Bob, it's still good training. Sure, it is good training. It's good training. One guy made a comment, well, what instructor uses cardboard targets that shoot back? No instructor uses cardboard targets that shoot back because those don't exist. But guess what a lot of instructors teach? Force-on-force training. How about other people who shoot back? How about training at other people who are moving and shooting back at you? Force-on-force. They're shooting airsoft guns, and you're shooting at them, and they're shooting at you. So, yeah, a lot of instructors teach this kind of stuff. You have to remember that the IDPA that we go out there and shoot, or the USPSA match that we go out and shoot, while it's a game and it can teach you a lot of good skills, it's definitely not a waste. And let me tell you what, I don't think the target shooters have an advantage when they're playing games in the action shooting sports either. You know, what I like about action shooting sports is you're drawing from the holster quickly, and you're putting rounds on target quickly, and you're learning how to do that in a safe and effective manner, and you're moving your body while you're shooting. How could learning to target shoot give you that advantage? You can learn to improve your marksmanship. Now, here's what I don't like about the video this guy put out. I think it's kind of disingenuous. He kind of implies that none of the other training matters. What I think he should have said in this video would have been a great video if he would have said, target shooting or marksmanship is one of the very important skills that you need to learn in order to be able to defend yourself. While there are many other skills out there that you need to know, such as shooting on the move and point shooting and force on force, target shooting, if you master it, can help you a great deal. And it is one big piece of the puzzle in learning how to defend yourself with a handgun. You see, that I think would have been a more effective way to put his argument. Would you agree? I just think he was very disingenuous, and I think he was kind of taking a slap. I think he was kind of poking a finger in the eye to people who teach other, I think, very, very effective self-defense techniques. Because, let's face it, this is all like martial arts with a handgun. If some of you out there have ever trained in martial arts and you've trained in weapons training in martial arts, think about replacing one of those weapons with a handgun. And that's kind of pretty much what you need to know to win a defensive use. And earlier in the podcast, one of the people that called in via voicemail said, you know, the bad guy is probably going to immediately get an advantage on you. And I agree. I've said that many times. The bad guy is going to dictate how the fight starts. Well, if that's the case, you think the bad guy is going to be standing there letting you shoot at him in a target shooting manner? You know, if you whip out your fancy schmancy 1911 that's guaranteed to shoot inch and a half groups at 25 yards, great, that's a nice gun. I got two questions. Can you shoot an inch and a half at 25 yards? A lot of people cannot. But is the bad guy going to let you stand there and shoot an inch and a half groups at him? All right. Yeah, just think about all this stuff here. And that's something that he didn't mention in this video. So I'm not sure. The other thing is he didn't produce any evidence. Okay. When I make an argument, I like to produce some evidence or at least some backup and talk about why I feel this way. And I like to cite some evidence. Even if the evidence is somebody that actually did it or an example on the street, or even an expert who's been there, done that, that says, hey, you know what, I succeeded in this gunfight, or I succeeded in this scenario because of my skills and because of this particular skill. Does that make sense? Okay, there's very little backup or very little evidence, or really I couldn't hear any in there. And I've watched this video a couple times, and I'll link to the video in the show notes. You can, you know, sometimes watching a video is more effective for some people than listening to a video. So I'll put a good link in the show notes for that. But, you know, this is kind of a short segment here to the show, but I wanted to throw my two cents in on there because, on this one, because I think it's kind of, I think it's disingenuous, like I said. And I'd love to see the guy remake the video, although he probably won't because it sounds like he's very hardcore towards the target shooting skill. That's okay, but I think he leads people to believe that as long as you're a good target shooter, you're fine and you don't need to learn anything else. And I think that's 100% false. So, with that said, I want to ask you to please don't forget about next August. Ben and I are coming to Seattle. We're going to Squim, Washington. We're going to do that class again with Glenn Tate and a couple members of the team that was so popular last year. We've expanded it and turned it into a two-day class. There's still room in that class. That's in August of this year. Northern Ohio, we've got sign-ups for that. That started already up near the Canton area. We're coming up there to teach Beyond Concealed Carry Enhanced. We're getting pretty full for our South Dakota class. If you're still planning on attending and training with us up in South Dakota in May of this year, don't hesitate too much longer, because that's filling up. And then, of course, in November, Chaz from the Road Gunner podcast and Tracy Thronberg are coming down here to join up with Ben and I, coming to San Antonio, Texas, the Alamo City, at a place to shoot. And we are going to teach a real nice two-day, four instructors, all four of us. This is going to be a really cool event because it's rarely been taught this way. That's going to be in November of this year, and you can find all this information at handgunworld.com. That's handgunworld.com. Last but not least, thank you for the support on the Shooters Club and my Amazon page. You can access wonderful videos that Ben and I produce on how to use a handgun effectively. There's a membership fee for that. And, of course, you cannot spend any extra money. Just make your Amazon purchases through my Amazon store link. You can find that at handgunworld.com. Proceeds benefit the Handgun World podcast. Folks, I'm Bob Main. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Handgun World podcast. As I say, I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. Remember that the loudest sound a shooter hears is what? It's a bang when he's expecting a click, or it's a click when he's expecting a bang. Shoot straight, shoot safe. Talk to you next time. Goodbye.